Welcome to Soaring Lit.
I am Inaray, and I welcome all of the wonderful listeners to this podcast for this moment that I am taking to offer with our wonderful melody. Through my art, I encourage readers and listeners to return home. Transform and discover that absolutely no circumstance can diminish the life and light that shines within each soul. My music and poetry is fused with a neo-soul sound in celebration of an African concept, Sankofa, which defines the process of going back to our roots, searching out and acquiring what would be helpful to move forward in our lives. To date, I've recorded two albums, Rena's Moan, and most recently, The Brooding of Emmeline Oliver. Both works are enjoyed by listeners who seek a healing path and an opportunity to face their spiritual truths. My connection to the South, I would say, is more spiritual than anything. I would love to say that it's because I was raised on the land and walked barefoot on the dirt, but that was not the case. I and my mother were born and raised up north in New Jersey, but as the spiritual folks say about our seed, I sat in my mother's womb. When she sat in my grandmother's womb, when she sat in my great-grandmother's womb. And so that is my connection. Additionally, my father was born and raised in Georgia, and his seed with my name on it sat in his body as he was in my grandmother's womb, as she was in my great-grandmother's womb, who is venerated for this podcast and the work that I'm doing today for you all. So by tapping into the ancestral energy that lives within my DNA, I am connected to the South. I remember when I was a little girl, wherever I went, people would ask me, "What part of the South are you from?" And it's because something of my grandmother, my great-grandmother, was preserved in our home, down to the accent. And so later, of course, after, you know, we moved and I was around a lot of people who did not speak in a Southern accent, it started to dissipate. I also remember when I first moved away into a predominantly white neighborhood, I remember speaking in such a way that was attached to the Gullah Geechee style of teaching, of talking, I'll say. You're saying things like, "Her said, you know, don't do that." I would call a friend, one of my Jewish friends, and her father would pick up and I would say, "Is she here?" Or, and he would correct me and say, "No, she's not. She's not here with you, but she's here with us." And he would think it was funny, make a joke about the accent. So it took me well until I was a teenager before it went away. I will say that it wasn't until I was in my early 30s that the South made its way into my writing. I've been writing up until that point, but it started to influence my creative work because I decided that at that time I wanted to give my voice over to what was happening on the inside of me. There were still questions as a woman born of Southern grandmothers in my soul and my heart that were not answered. There were still struggles that I was working through. Who am I? Who am I in relation to myself? Who am I in relation to men? Who am I in relationship to my children? They were still sitting there and I had to work through it. And I felt like the only answer that I had was to honor the subtleties that were within my body, my DNA, my soul, which I considered was my true nature. So at that point, I discovered the word Sankofa, which is a West African word and principle to us in the West that says it's not taboo to go back into the past and discover something that was lost or forgotten and use it to move forward in life. And so my grandmother's voices were back there, and they hadn't quite made it into my present the way that they were supposed to, so that I could move forward as authentically as possible. And I'm thankful for making that decision, because it did change me as a woman. One of the biggest fears that I have when creating is that because I'm pulling on something that is so soft, and so subtle and so loving, that I may not be hearing correctly. And this is because I was trained in the Western world of academia, and we are not taught in those spaces to listen to those subtleties, to listen to the love, to listen to what are obviously the sounds of our mothers in our ears. We are taught to put something else in our brain that is given, and then build off of those thoughts, those theories, that information. So I was well versed in that when I was writing and understanding, and but not versed in, wait a minute, this is what I have to say because it's sitting in me, not because somebody gave me the authority, so to speak, to produce it. So that was one fear that I had. And even today, after years of saying, okay, this is it, I still check in with others to be sure, namely my family members. So for example, when writing this latest work that I'll be reading today, Savannah the Great, as soon as I stepped foot on Georgia soil, drove through South Carolina, which my mother's in Georgia, South Carolina, and Florida. This may sound disturbing, but the rape energy became so strong in subtle form. My mothers were raped by white men and black men. And I felt it as soon as I hit the land, and I had to start asking which ancestor, you know, was tapping in. And so it was my great grandmother Savannah on my father's side, and I started to ask questions, you know, of that subtle voice in me. And she wanted to touch on it a little bit. And then my desire to venerate, to say, you know what, whatever was felt back then, whatever shame still lie within, when she left here, it's enough, because she was beautiful and she was passionate and she loved and she raised family, and the rape is not going to be the story, but she wanted to touch a little bit on that so that I could venerate and raise that energy up. And I was afraid. So I called my auntie Gladys, who was she was the matriarch at the moment remaining, who remembers my great grandma, and I felt her more strongly when it rained. For some reason, when I got to Savannah, it was raining all the time, storming like every night. And I felt my nose energy in the storm. And as soon as I started talking to my auntie Gladys, she began to tell me about how she got here. And she told me about how when women were moved from one farm to the next, when our black men were moved from one farm to the next, they just took on the name. So you could be on one farm, be named Oliver, taking on the name of the owner of the farm. But then as soon as you moved, and which happened to her, and I don't know what her name was before, but she moved on to a farm owned by a Dent. And Dent, the white man, was the one who named my great-grandmother's mother. And my aunt also said it was very unfortunate that when some of the white owners felt like you were beautiful, they just picked you and decided, this is who I want. And that was it. They picked you. So that was something that I believe was suffered. And I didn't feel right. That fear made me call my auntie. And when she told me, that's when I, so it's like I need the confirmation. I suppose at some point I will do the work and feel extremely confident in what I'm feeling, but I'm still dealing with the fear when I start writing. And Auntie Gladys, because of that, ended up in the poem. My current project at the moment, I did recently put out a book that I've been working on for years called Sankofa and Christianity. And I also wrote an essay on forgiveness from the Hawaiian. The Hawaiians have a concept called Ho'oponopono. I'm not sure if any of my listeners today have heard of that. But it's a wonderful short script, you know, that you can bring to the table of forgiveness. And so I took the time to work through that script in an essay on forgiving my fathers, entitled it Ho'oponopono, Forgiving My Fathers. And then I'm literally currently in process working on a poem that will be laid over a musical track and exploring women, motherhood, womanhood, the divine feminine, as it relates to our understanding of Christianity, which is deeply rooted in the divine masculine. So I'm having fun with it, but it's still not formed yet. So I'm excited about that. When I think of artists that I consider to be sacred, two of them come to mind immediately. First one is an artist. She was a visual artist. She painted. And her name is Tamara Natalie Madden. Her work is beautiful. And it's sacred to what I believe is the Southern Black woman, as well as the roots that we have to the Caribbean, which is not often discussed, our relationship to the Caribbean. And she was Caribbean. She passed away, unfortunately, at a very young age, but I was able to meet her before she passed, and I was able to purchase a piece that I can't even find now. I mean, I tried to find it while I was preparing for this podcast, and I couldn't find it, but it's called Sankofa Queen. But if you just type in Tamara Natalie Madden, well, if you have not heard of her, you'll be wowed, and you will see the sacredness. As soon as you see an image that she created, you will see it. So I put her out there for you all to honor and respect what she gave and whatever sacred energy, positive energy you can put out for her, her family, and her loss. The second writer you probably all know about, all listeners who know something about sacred Southern writers is Zora Neale Hurston. I call her sacred. I am so glad. I believe it was Alice Walker. I believe it was Alice Walker. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but her name and Toni Morrison's name are in my head right now, of who discovered her work and decided, oh my word, the world needs to see this woman's work. I enjoy what she tried to share about how our Southern Black men and women related to one another, which is sacred to me because otherwise the family would not be here. That's how our souls make it to this plane on the earth. So it's very sacred. I resonated mostly, which was one of her most popular ones, because I didn't read it until I was in college. Their eyes were watching God. And I thought, oh, God's in the title. And this is a great selection for contemporary Black writers, so I'm going to read it. And I was wowed. So I'd never read a story about the process that women, you know, would go through over time, finding themselves in relationship to men. So that resonates with me. And another thing that resonated is I believe that somewhere in her work, in that work, I'm not sure if it's found in other works as loudly, she tries to get us to discuss our relationship to other women. Not just Black women, but just women in general. How can we come together? How can we stop fighting? How can we help one another? And in that, I see relationship. If you have the time to check out a short story she wrote called Sweat. that story, and when I hit that, or put it next to, comparatively speaking, to Kate Chopin's work, The Story of an Hour, I see where, you know, we were, many women during the suffering and suffrage, we're really saying the same things, and there's a lot of overlap and intersectionality there that I think we can still tap into, we can get away from, you know, what's still struggling there with our relationship to men. So I'm going to read the poem Savannah the Great for you, for those of you who have been listening for this part. Savannah the Great, in veneration to my great-grandmother Savannah. In quiet storms stretched throughout the third quarter of each day, streaks of lightning burst themselves into dusk, almost sundown around town, eventide skies gone after an eighth of a second. We see you. Perfectly zigzag line shooting up from the earth, curving right for miles and then off to the left toward infinity. And it tells me everything about how you landed, lived, loved, and left, great mother Savannah. Seems your timing is always just before liquid sunshine showers fall. Unfathomable depths of water, inexhaustible rhythms in our wombs, unending orgasmic tears release themselves from grandma's eyes when you landed. Entering this realm, purpose to tango before its time, young and barefoot on dry and thirsty clay. Happily greeting mama, dirt, every step of the way. Us sense your life in the heart of we God. We own fathers who don't quite know you. Enti them mukra too coming to me cross lapse timelines, but I'm supposed to pray. Baptize them again, no better. Show me where forgiveness draws its breath. Because August just left, great mother Savannah. Seems your timing is always just before that liquid sunshine showers fall. Us hear your love. As hard as that fear in priestess's voice when she speaks of Hevioso's thunder, shockwaves scattering, whisking bodies away from what they will never possess. but Auntie Gladys remembers your call to your grandchildren. Here come my shango-shangas, reminding me to run to you. Arms, smiles open wide. We're here. Us touched by bands of rain that replenish my inner umbra. Cleansing prayers, nurturing gifts, loving beingness, giving we life. You left, transformed like the smoke of burning camphor, positively, peacefully, pleasingly. When clouds give way, love's residue is golden rain. Now us smell the favor upon our family today and forever, like the lavender sage and frankincense of ancient temples where I pay close attention. Myself study hard while standing on the bank of the Ogeechee River. Then myself know your real names, a scarification, fierce, eternal branding upon the left chamber of we hearts. September, your great mother Savannah. Seems timing is always just before liquid, sunshine, showers, fall. My readers can find me on Facebook. My apologies for how I engage on social media. I'm not there a lot, but I do have a Facebook page in the name of Inaray. And I also have an Instagram page. So if you want to reach me there, you can. You can reach me on Facebook. And of course, you can always reach me on my website, inaray.com. Thank you so much, Soren Litt, for having me. I truly appreciate the opportunity to share with you, Melody, and your listeners. All love, all respect.
Thanks so much for listening to the Soren Litt podcast. Please review the work of our featured writers and other creatives by following our website at sorenlitt.com. That's SORENLIT.com. Thank you for listening.